CFWHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Christopher Cruz. Israel is increasing its air attacks on Gaza, says CBS's Charlie Daggett in Tel Aviv.
The full force of Israeli airstrikes and artillery resumed overnight and this morning. And a rare airstrike in the West Bank on a suspected Hamas terror cell in Jenin. 2 weeks of heavy bombardment has left Gaza in ruins with a death toll that surpassed 4,300 people, another 13,000 injured.
Israel may be attacking Gaza to soften it up for a ground invasion. Here's IDF spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Kornikas.
In the south, our aerial campaign continues. We are preparing for the next stage of operations. We are targeting Hamas leaders, their infrastructure, the logistic infrastructure, and everything related to Hamas combat capabilities.
The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees says it will run out of fuel in Gaza in 3 days. The head of the agency, Philippe Lazzarini.
What we need is a significant scaling up of a supply line into Gaza, and it needs to be sustained and it needs to be uninterrupted.
Egypt says 17 trucks crossed into Gaza today. America's military is on the move in the Middle East, guarding against any group or nation that might be considering an attack on American interests in the region. Secretary of State Antony Blinken on CBS's Face the Nation.
A very clear message from the president, backed up by the deployment of two of our largest aircraft carrier battle groups, to make sure that it's clear no one should take advantage of this moment to escalate to further attacks on Israel or, for that matter, attacks on us, on our personnel.
South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham is in Tel Aviv today with a warning for one of that country's neighbors.
We're here today to tell Iran we're watching you. If this war grows, it's coming to your backyard.
Republican Congressman Michael McCaul tells ABC his colleagues have to get it together and elect a speaker.
It's my 10th term in Congress.
Yeah.
This is probably one of the most embarrassing things I've seen, because if we don't have a Speaker of the House, we can't govern.
They'll try again this week, although it's not clear if any Republican can get the 217 votes needed to be elected to the job that is second in line to the presidency. Police at this hour are searching for the estranged son of the Nashville police chief. John Drake Jr. is suspected of shooting two police officers outside a Dollar General store in the city of Laverne yesterday. In a statement, Nashville Chief John Drake said his son is a felon who has, quote, resorted to years of criminal activity. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
Jim Gaffigan here.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. On Wednesday, the Department of Natural Resources Policy Board is set to consider the first update to Wisconsin's wolf management plan in 16 years. Roz Brown has more now on what wolf advocates have to say about it.
In late 2022, the DNR released a draft plan that wolf advocates were ready to accept. But since then, Kim Hollis, with the group Friends of the Wisconsin Wolves and Wildlife, says another revised plan has surfaced.
We kind of got the rug pulled out from under us because at the last minute, the plan was changed. It's not at all similar to the original draft plan.
2 years ago, Wisconsin hunters killed 218 wolves in a week, far exceeding the state's limit of 119. That resulted in a lawsuit against the DNR by animal welfare groups. A judge ultimately required the agency to prepare an updated wolf management plan prior to another hunting season. When the original draft plan was released, Hollis says wolf advocates were encouraged that it included recommendations not only from hunters and trappers, but also tribes and wildlife advocates. But she worries the DNR will be more persuaded by those who want to hunt wolves than pro-wildlife stakeholders.
The hunters and the trappers, even though they're a smaller group than the majority of the public, wanted more wolves. They make a lot of noise, and they seek to be treated differently because I think they've become accustomed to that over all these years.
Meanwhile, a bill has been introduced in the Wisconsin legislature to force the DNR to include a hard cap on the state's wolf population in the new management plan. The agency has declined to do so, saying a cap would limit flexibility in managing the wolf population. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Roz Brown. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
OptUS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at SoundItOutTogether.org, brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, thank you, Don Rue. Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's Wednesday, October 18th, and it's another beautiful day to have you here up north. From wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network or through the Civic Media app, by podcast or by social media, nice to have you here in the state of Wisconsin Sense. We're going to unpack the news for you, and we're going to start it pretty early because there is so much to deal with today, including what some folks might say is a real power play in Madison. It's not. It's a tantrum. It was an unprecedented display by legislative Republicans on Tuesday of complete and total disdain for citizen service in Wisconsin and for the will of the voters. Republicans in the state Senate on Tuesday, for no decent reason whatsoever, fired 8 of Governor Tony Evers' appointees. In one case, so many people on the state Natural Resources Board that it was left without a quorum, without the ability to do its job. One of the people fired included our normal Wednesday visitor, Melissa Baldoff, who is a domestic abuse survivor and who was serving as co-chair of the Governor's Council on Domestic Abuse. We're going to talk to her a little earlier than usual this morning. She's going to tell us about the sexism put on display by at least one senator, himself a former police chief, in handling her nomination and subsequent removal from the Domestic Abuse Council. Melissa then, of course, will stick around and we'll talk about issues related to a changing climate and what that means for Wisconsin. Then in our next hour, another big story. It deals with a lawsuit that was filed last week, one we've known was coming for a while. And it's official now, and it is a lawsuit that seeks to drive a stake through the heart of the voucher school program that was created and encouraged by those looking to undermine Wisconsin public schools to the extent that it has become a second parallel school system in Wisconsin that taxpayers have to pay for, that they shouldn't have to pay for. The state constitution calls for one school system that taxpayers are responsible for. This lawsuit doesn't look to get rid of private education in any way, shape, or form, but says if you want to go to private school, you pay your own freight. There's one school system that Wisconsin taxpayers should be responsible for. We will talk to the lead plaintiff in there, Julie Underwood, and Heather Dubois-Bornon of the Wisconsin Public Education Network. We're also going to get the updated weather forecast. We're going to talk to Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio in Wisconsin Rapids later this hour when we do today's history lesson and music segment. And then we will wrap things up, as we often do on Wednesdays, by talking to Todd Alba, whose show airs on the Civic Media Radio Network from 1 to 3 in the afternoons. Temperatures across Wisconsin right now about 15 degrees warmer than yesterday, and that's a relief. It is 49 degrees up here on Lake Wissota. It's 49 in Madison. It's 49 in Hayward. It's 48 in La Crosse and Wisconsin Rapids. It's 45 in Waukesha and Wausau. And the cool spot across the Civic Media radio network of stations would be in Green Bay, where it is 42 degrees right now. As we get into things here, if you have questions or comments, there's a couple of different ways where you can have input. You can call us up live at 844-967-2789. Happy to talk to you. Happy to answer any questions. Keep in mind as well that that same phone number isn't just for calls. You can text us as well at that same number, 844-967-2789. You can do both of those as well through the Civic Media app. Put that on your phone and you can text or call us, and we'll mention the texts as they come in. Same goes for the comments. If you hear something as you watch us on a live feed on Facebook, just put a comment there right underneath the live video feed. We'll see it, maybe put it up on screen, maybe respond to that as well. So as I said, we have a lot of ground to cover today. We cannot forget, though, as always, a tip of the cap and a note of thanks to Sam Davison, who's standing by down in Madison, flipping all the knobs and switches and keeping this radio circus on the air with all the plates spinning. Sam, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm a little tired, but I'm doing pretty good.
It and I think it's a function of the darkness, you know, this early in the morning.
I was up a little late the past couple nights too, but
The night before I had just a wicked case of insomnia. So yeah, it's getting dark earlier. If you're not taking care of yourself, if you're still trying to stay up a little late, it kind of comes back to bite you every now and then, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true. We'll work through it.
Now, by chance, was it related to the engine rebuilding project that you've got going, or
no?
Other things happening.
I work part time at a theater on the UW campus. I run film projectors.
Oh,
so, I was out there doing that.
Film project. So not everything is computerized yet, huh? There's still a projector that needs to be run.
Well, I mean, they only do it for like specialty events or like glass screenings, but. Here and there, yeah.
Oh, that's very cool. And then I suppose you get free popcorn as one of the perks.
If they make it, yeah.
All right. Well, good. But unfortunately, yeah, there's not a lot of matinees anymore. People want to see these things in the evening and keeps you up a little bit past your normal bedtime, I would imagine.
Oh, tad. Not too bad, though.
Okay, that's all right. We'll manage to keep each other awake through the day until the sun rises here, and we really get going on this Wednesday. It's October 18th. Then again, when we come back, we'll really get into things with Republican legislators and their petty and unprecedented firing of gubernatorial appointees. We'll briefly touch on some of the other headlines of the day, a little bit of sports and more coming up. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north. And we'll be back on Lake Wissota after this.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight.
The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
93.5 The Tap.
The Todd Alba Show.
What makes our society great is that we can believe in something bigger than ourselves. Doesn't matter whether it's a soccer team or whether it's a political movement or whether it's a public school, whether it's a neighborhood PTA, a bake sale. It's about interacting with our friends and neighbors and making our communities better for having come together around a common cause.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the
here you come again. You're going to hear in our little history lesson and music break later this hour, I'm going to be rattling off a whole bunch of songs, just song titles. I don't have time to play all of the clips because we're going to be mentioning two different legendary songwriters who were born on this day in history, and then tell you just the wide range of music that they put together. Dolly Parton's Here You Come Again is one of them that we'll be talking about in just a little bit, so stick around. Melissa Kay from WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids will join us for that segment coming up at about 6:50. Very briefly in sports, the National League Baseball playoffs, the Phillies beat up on Arizona last night 10-0. Phillies up 2-0 in the National League Championship Series. The American League Championship Series resumes tonight in Dallas with Houston taking on the Texas Rangers. Houston's already up 2-0 in that series as well. The Up North News daily newsletter is out. Today's edition talks about the drive to plant 75 million trees across Wisconsin, one of the things that we can do to continue ensuring a healthy climate. The newsletter talks about 11 scenic drives that you can take around Wisconsin, and fall colors would be the perfect time for that. And then my editorial column about the anti-trans bills that have made their way through the legislature, including a bill that was passed by the state Senate yesterday, limiting the rights of transgender youth and their families. The headline being that, you know, in the end, hate won't win, but for the moment, the voices of hate have a very big megaphone, and they are running the Wisconsin legislature right now. More about that in just a sec, but I also want to mention in passing, the Assembly passed a bill yesterday that would help renovate American Family Field and keep the Brewers in the ballpark for the next several years. That bill now moves on to the state Senate. There was a new candidate announced for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District across western Wisconsin and part of central Wisconsin. His name is Eric Wilson. He's from Eau Claire. He becomes the 5th Democrat to announce for that primary to potentially run against Republican Derek Van Orden. We will talk to Eric Wilson in our 7 a.m. hour on Friday. And one more note out of the news internationally, and I know we got this on the text line yesterday, where somebody asked if we could help explain all the contradictory stories about what's happening in the Middle East. Is it, you know, Israelis who are bombing Gaza? We heard about that terrible tragedy yesterday with an explosion at a hospital in Gaza that killed hundreds. Was that Israel? Was that a Hamas rocket that misfired? Was it a completely separate group, Islamic Jihad, that is trying to undermine and inflame tensions in the area? And the only thing that bothers me more than everybody speculating about it is that we don't know. We don't know yet. And yet a lot of people are willing to point fingers. It is, of course, a place where, tension is raw, emotions are high. It's a war zone, and it's a conflict that's been going on since long before we got here, and we have had in fits and starts an ability to bring periods of peace to the region. We are not there at this moment. President Biden is in Israel this morning. We're going to let those talks continue and have events play themselves out and take more time at a future date to try to get to some of the building blocks that would help all of us understand this and come to our own political conclusions, but hopefully come to the same humanitarian conclusion that we should do whatever we can to minimize civilian casualties in this war. So we'll save that for another time. Okay, also on the website, upnorthnewswi.com, you will see my story about what Republicans did yesterday in the state Senate. The Republicans can confirm gubernatorial nominees whenever they like. In other words, a governor appoints people to head up departments, agencies, boards. And in Wisconsin, you don't have to wait for Senate confirmation. You start doing those duties right away. But then whenever the Senate gets around to taking a vote, if they vote not to confirm you, then that means essentially you're fired. It's very much, and let's be clear about this, this is a perverse way of handling Senate confirmations. But nobody has thought to change it in all of these many, many years because nobody had blatantly abused the process. Until Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature after Tony Evers was elected governor. Republicans are still sitting on more than 100 nominations, choosing not to confirm them so that essentially they have the power to fire them at any given point. They've done that with a cabinet secretary, Brad Paff, when he was heading up the state agriculture department. And they just did it yesterday to 8 Evers appointees, not for any high crimes or misdemeanors or malfeasance or anything, just because they're petty and they can do it. And I would urge everybody, the reason I am spending so much time emphasizing this is to not normalize it. Since 1981, the state Senate has only rejected 5 gubernatorial appointments. Governors are duly elected by Wisconsin voters. Governors should get to choose their agency heads, barring actual misdeeds. And one of the people that was fired yesterday was Melissa Baldoff. She is a former aide to Governor Evers, but she's also a former domestic abuse survivor. Governor Evers just called all of this a disregard for democracy. And he's absolutely right. And so I talked to Melissa late yesterday and asked her to recount the tale of how she came to be on the council and what happened next.
Back in 2019, I was appointed to by the governor to serve on the governor's council on domestic abuse in a role that is, one of the roles that's reserved for survivors. I am a survivor of domestic abuse, something I've, had to deal with for a long time, even though I'm very happily remarried now, something that stays with you a long time, the trauma, and with my kids. And being able to be involved in this council was for me, like for so many survivors who get involved in advocacy, really, one way to, work towards healing and to regain your voice. And so I was first appointed in 2019, was reappointed last year. They never confirmed me the first time. And then they took up both of my appointments and decided to vote me down because Senator Jesse James said basically that I was mean to some of his colleagues in tweets. I'm personally disappointed to not get to serve in this role. It's been very fulfilling for me. But, the broader concern I have is the kind of chilling effect it has on survivors, because the message is to shut up, to be quiet. If they aren't going to like what you say, the tweets he took offense to were ones where I called out racism and homophobia and transphobia and misogyny. And I won't apologize for calling those things out.
Okay. I want to make sure I have this straight because I'm hearing this for the first time. You're saying the person leading the voices, rejecting your being able to continue serving on a domestic violence panel was Senator Jesse James, the former police chief of Altoona, who knows a thing or two about this issue, and my words, not yours, might have an idea of how that looks, but apparently went ahead and did it anyway. That's the Senator Jesse James we're talking about here?
That's who chaired the committee, and they first voted me down in committee, yes. So I kind of led that charge there, and I actually had a conversation with him several months prior to being voted down in committee, where he, had a stack of my tweets printed out and told me he had some concerns about them, asked me if I hated all men, asked me if I felt like I was emotional when I made my tweets. But once we got through that.
He said that?
Oh, he sure did. He sure did. Wow. And after we got through all that, however, I held my tongue because doing that kind of work is really important to me. And it's a place where I set politics and partisanship aside. And after that, we had, I thought, a very, you know, productive conversation. We spoke at length about the role of law enforcement. You know, I relayed my experience that I, you know, the several times that I have had to call law enforcement in the past, you know, my interactions were very positive. I shared my concern for law enforcement officers and first responders generally. You know, they're often going into dangerous situations. And, you know, we just saw earlier this week a report come out from End Abuse of Wisconsin talking about the 20% increase in domestic violence homicides in Wisconsin. We are one of the worst states. Further data will come out federally in about a month. But as of last year, we were the seventh worst state in the country for domestic violence homicides. Because of our 20% increase, that number is expected to get even worse this year. And, you know, most of those homicides, the overwhelming majority of those homicides are gun related. And also that counts gun suicides as well. So, you know, the report also detailed the significant underfunding that is happening to domestic violence programs. They are experiencing tens of millions of dollars in shortfall. And instead of dealing with any of that, they want to send a message to a lady they don't like. So it's just, I think it's very representative of the way they're acting broadly.
I guess we shouldn't be surprised, but can we still be, what, disappointed, almost shockingly so in cases like yours?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it just goes to show that, you know, there's just really not a bottom for them yet. Years ago, I thought, well, it couldn't get worse than this. And every time I thought that, they found a way to, you know, let the bar sink a little bit lower. So, you know, I think that's going to continue to be the case. You know, here in Wisconsin, in D.C., where you got, you know, our six congressmen voting for an insurrectionist to be speaker. You know, it's like you don't think that it could get worse. And yet it does.
And yet it does indeed. Melissa Baldoff will join us on the other side of the break to talk more about our usual weekly climate segment. But let me take the rest of this segment to note some of the other firings yesterday, including former legislators. You talk about having any type of legislative professional courtesy? No. Joseph Czarnecki, former Milwaukee County Clerk, former state rep, former state senator, was fired from the Wisconsin Elections Commission for standing up to the Republican imaginary firing of Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf. By firing members of the Natural Resources Board, it has been unable to meet or act until the governor names new members, something the governor did do right away. Sheldon Wasserman, an OBGYN and former state senator and chair of the Medical Examining Board, was fired yesterday as well for having the audacity to stand up for women's reproductive health rights. And there was a gentleman who was let go from a board that hears challenges to decisions on where to build livestock facilities because of opposition by business groups. Don't normalize this, folks. This is a Saturday night massacre of Wisconsin proportions that nobody needs to tolerate. Back after this, you're up north.
CBS News Brief. A few aid trucks have made it into Gaza this weekend, but World Food Program Chief Cindy McCain says not enough.
We need secure and sustainable access in there, in that region, so that we can feed. This is a catastrophe happening, and we just simply have to get these trucks in.
Republican Congressman Michael McCaul tells ABC the fight over who should be speaker is one of the most embarrassing things he's seen in almost 20 years in the House.
And this is so dangerous, what we're doing.
And most importantly, it's embarrassing because it empowers and emboldens our adversaries like Chairman Xi, who says, you know, democracy doesn't work.
Detroit police are looking for the killer or killers of synagogue president Samantha Wall, Sam Dubin of the Jewish Community Relations Council.
She was just a ray of energy that illuminated with whoever she was talking to or the room that she was speaking in front of. She really has left an amazing legacy behind.
Her funeral was held today. CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Time out.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Sturdy old part of the city. All right, we're back now talking about the newly filed lawsuit that takes aim at what I refer to for shorthand purposes as the voucher school program. There's a lot more to it. There's multiple programs. There are things that are private, things that are quasi-public. And so we'll get the details on what exactly a new lawsuit wants to have done with Julie Underwood, who's one of the plaintiffs in the case, former dean of the UW-Madison School of Education, and Heather Dubois-Bornon from the Wisconsin Public Education Network. Heather, Julie, nice to have you both here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, let's start with you because your name is on the suit, and because Robin Voss, the assembly speaker, is one of the defendants. I think we'll be knowing the lawsuit as Underwood versus Voss, Underwood v. Voss. So I'm going to let you have the honors of explaining in your own words what is Underwood v. Voss.
Well, first, thank you very much, and thanks for everybody who's interested in these issues. First of all, let's talk about the name, Underwood versus Voss. Yes, I'm one of a group of six named plaintiffs, but we're really representing everyone who supports public schools and everyone who is against vouchers. And normally, a lawsuit like this would be filed against the Department of Public Instruction, which it is, and against the state because the state's, you know, like the state budget officer and those kind of things. But we chose to put Robin Voss up front because Robin Voss is actually the one who has caused more damage to public schools in the time that he's been in office than anyone else. And it's the legislature that's created these programs. Department of Public Instruction has to administer them, but the legislature's created this these programs. So we thought it was important to put Voss front and center.
So now go ahead and tell us what it is that the suit aims to do. Best case scenario.
Okay, I'll do it really fast. Mm-hmm. Two things, two important things, and all the voucher programs in the state of Wisconsin. And we can talk about how big they are. They are a behemoth, just like you said. And second, and the spending caps that the legislature has put on public school districts across the state of Wisconsin, because they've been strangling public schools as well. And so it would do those two things, and I'd be glad to unpack them however you want to.
All right. Let's bring in Heather as well, because Heather, along with everybody at the Wisconsin Public Education Network, they have been tireless advocates, not just for public education overall, but then especially with this growing threat of the voucher school system. Heather, just give me your overview of it when people say, what is it that you guys just filed? How do you explain it to lay people?
Yeah, well, first of all, we're not directly involved in the filing of the case, but I've been fielding questions about it since the news came out, and people are just feeling a sense of relief that this is a long overdue intervention, as vouchers increasingly have shrunk the size of the pot that's available in public school fundings across the state. And we are seeing more and more and more belt tightening as the level of funding for public schools hasn't even kept pace with inflation for 16 years, while the state continues to invest disproportionately in this side program that plays by its own set of rules. So as people have seen the impacts of that play out at the local level, they are growing increasingly frustrated with how unfair that system is and questioning whether or not it's constitutional.
And the system itself, as I understand it, Julie, is this. The Wisconsin state constitution essentially guarantees and dictates a free as what practicable public education to students, says nothing about paying for two parallel school systems. And yet it sure seems that's where we are in Wisconsin these days.
Absolutely. So Article 10, Section 3, the Wisconsin Constitution guarantees all children in the state of Wisconsin a public education, tuition free, and it has to be uniform as practicable. So the legislature has to create a system of public schools. It says to create a system of public schools. It doesn't say anything about creating two parallel systems and sucking the money out of the public school system and providing it to the private school system, which is what is happening.
And isn't that what we really get at here, is that when this was first started, when voucher schools were started as a small experiment in Milwaukee, people said, let's try this because test scores in Milwaukee aren't very good, etc. And that's when it was legally challenged, and courts then said, yeah, we'll, you know, let this go forward. And frankly, there just hasn't been the political climate until now and to challenge it. And again, Heather, it's the immense growth in this that is crying out for a court to once again be asked, is this right?
Yeah, people are paying close attention to this. Almost every bit of voucher expansion that we've seen in this state has happened in sort of sneaky last minute budget moves without opportunity for public impact. And so the sort of shady way that these have been forced through politically is largely because there's no public clamor for them. What the public sees when these programs roll out is that parents and students are losing the rights and protections that are afforded them in our public schools only. And kids are not necessarily getting their needs met in this private system either. So what we want at Wisconsin Public Education Network is the state to restore its commitment to making sure that every single kid has equal access to an excellent public school, and that we are funding those schools at the levels that they need to make sure that all students can thrive. Only our public schools have that obligation. And until the state starts meeting that obligation, I really don't know how we can justify throwing all of our money away in a system that doesn't protect the rights of kids.
So, Julie, let's go beyond the voucher school system itself. As you noted, this is in part about revenue caps, revenue limits, something that, again, I don't think I see it in the state constitution anyplace, but that legislators at some point said, well, public schools are overtaxing, in their opinion, and that something needs to be done about it. How does that fit into this lawsuit?
Well, it fits into this lawsuit in that the legislature has created these revenue caps. They call it revenue caps. They're actually spending caps. And there are different caps for every district across the state of Wisconsin. And these spending limits were created at a time when the state was committed to providing two-thirds funding, and they wanted to control how much the locals were spending, because when the locals raised their spending, it kicked in a match from the state. So it was two-thirds funding. Also, the legislature had said at that time that there was going to be an escalator on it, so there was a regular cost of living increase. And there also was at the same time a piece about teacher salary negotiations. Now, since this happened, you know, long time ago, 30 years ago, there are no more teacher negotiations, since during the Walker years, we ended teacher unions, basically, public unions, basically. So that doesn't exist anymore. The cost of living increase also ended during the Walker years, when they actually cut those spending limits. They rather than taking them up, they cut them down, and we haven't had those adjustments, regular adjustments, since then. And of course, you know, what's left?
Yeah, they haven't maintained the program that they had set up, the promises that they had made.
Now, to be fair, mm-hmm. they have gone back to two-thirds funding, but mm-hmm. only because the spending has shrunk so much, the local spending has shrunk so much, that the state has technically is now spending two-thirds money for the public education budget. But it's also a little accounting trick. So in that two-thirds, they add in property tax relief and a bunch of other stuff that really does not go to schools. It does not go to kids in the classroom, for sure.
It has become convoluted to the point where it kind of looks like that meme of a criminal investigation board, and there's pieces of string all over the board. You try to explain. Honestly, seriously, you try to explain the school funding formula to people. I have tried.
I try to explain the school funding formula a lot, and so does Heather.
So
it's unnecessarily complex and unnecessarily like opaque. It's not transparent at all.
It leads to this question then. If successful, let me frame it this way, in the terms of the gerrymandering lawsuit. Because again, in both cases, it's taken 15 years of conservative control of the state Supreme Court to finally go away because of the voters. You now have progressive control of the court, and so you have this new challenge to the gerrymandered maps, and now a challenge to voucher schools. In the case of the gerrymandered maps, what's being sought, and the motions were filed this week making it official, was to say, members of the court, we would like you to not only throw out these old maps, we would like you to redraw the maps. Don't take, submissions from other people. Courts have drawn the maps before. You draw the maps. Is there a parallel there in that, in this lawsuit, are you asking the court to do something that spells out a school funding formula, or just to throw this out and the legislature has to do something to revise how schools are funded in Wisconsin?
No. This would not draw a new school finance formula. As a matter of fact, this is not about the school finance formula itself. It's about the voucher programs. And it's asking the court to strike those voucher programs so that, and the independent charters programs, so that those no longer exist in the state of Wisconsin. Those private schools are no longer funded out of the public school budget any longer. And it's asking to strike the revenue limits. So it's not asking the court to come up with something new, because that's the legislature's responsibility. The Constitution says it's the legislature's responsibility to fund public schools and to create those systems.
It sounds to me, Heather, like what would come from all of this is, rather than saying, hey, court, draw something new, is like if you just you know, strip this down, if you take some of the gunk out, which would be the voucher school program and the revenue limits, you actually would have a streamlined way to fund schools that would fund public schools properly.
Exactly, Pat. I mean, ending these unaccountable programs puts us on a path towards seeking the fairness all of our kids deserve. We know that this state can afford to fully and fairly fund its public schools, but for reasons that baffle all of us, they choose not to. Instead, they've invested in a program that we're spending nearly $500 million a year on already that has its cap slated to come off in just 2 years. We have to be prepared for what we're going to do in that moment and make sure that we are protecting the students who attend the schools our Constitution requires us to provide an excellent education in, and make sure that they have their needs met. And so this suit could go a long way into setting the stage for that circumstance and getting Wisconsin back on a path towards fairness and excellence and restoring its commitment to its children. Pat, I think you are muted.
There I do. I did it again. I got to get a brighter light on this computer. Like on TV, a great big red light bulb, you know, hangs down from the studio. I need one of those, or maybe something that puts an electric shock on my chair. I don't know. Whatever the case may be. I was simply going to conclude by saying that our friend Kirk Bangstead of the Minocqua Brewing Company, Minocqua Brewing Company Super PAC, has been an unabashed champion helping fundraise for the legal expenses in this. He talks about it on his own podcast and radio show on Thursday nights on another network. We'll talk more about that at another time, but because we've run out of time here, I've got just enough time to thank you, Heather, and to thank you, Julie, and to say come back frequently with every update of the case along the way, and we wish you all the best with it. Thank you so much, ladies.
Thank you.
Happy to come back anytime.
Oh, we'll count on it. We'll every motion that gets filed, they're going to get a phone call from me saying, all right, come on, let's get an update on this, because people are going to watch this like they're watching the gerrymandering lawsuit, like they're watching the challenge to the 1849 abortion ban, all of this that could lead to, frankly, a new day in Wisconsin and emerge from, you know, more than a decade of darkness. Todd Alba will be up next to talk about what's on his show, including the recent news about some very sad news coming from the University of Wisconsin system. Back after this, you're up north.
Girl, there's a better life for me and you. Believe me, baby.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager.
Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Buddy.
Welcome back.
Luke Mathers, everybody. I'm sorry, I should have queued up a wild round of applause as well. But
woo!
There you go.
Good. On Kristen. Glad to be back.
Yeah, how's our favorite honeymooner?
It was a great time. I'm a little whiplash now that I'm back, you know, trying to catch back up with the headlines. It's a weird feeling. Getting back into the swing of things. But
Sam, turn that camera on and tell people what you told me at the very start of the show when I mentioned Luke. I said, is he like throwing his weight around? He's in boss mode again. And you said, no, the poor guy's been sucked into nonstop meetings to get caught up.
Well, yeah, I heard that he like had a big pile of papers on his desk to go through, and he's like been in a bunch of meetings since he got back. He's been a busy guy.
It's been a hectic couple of days, but I'm feeling a little bit better about getting caught up. So it's been interesting.
Well, without giving away state secrets, what can you tell us about your honeymoon travels?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the metric system. Public transportation, amazing in Europe. Didn't really have to rely. I think we took one cab all together, but everything else was trams, trains, buses. It was incredible. Couple there as well, though. I had a really great time, and if I ever go missing, don't look in Ireland. That's the moral of the story. You definitely won't find me in Ireland if I ever
wink.
Go missing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's great. How far in advance did you plan your trips?
Some of it had a good amount of legwork, mm-hmm. planned in advance. Other things we were kind of flying by the seat of our pants. So it was a little bit of both things. Our time in London, when we were at the end of our trip, we were both pretty exhausted, Kelsey and I, mm-hmm. and we had already walked more than 200 miles across the continent. And that wasn't like from point A to point B, that was just exploring in all the different cities that we were in. And so we kind of just spent some time on the West End and went to a couple of musical productions. So that was what we decided to do in London. We had some availability in the schedule, and we left it kind of open to play it by ear. And relaxing and going and seeing some excellent performances. I got to see Hamilton and Wicked. And
wow.
That was a good way to kind of wind the trip down, because we were, after 3 weeks, we were both very, very exhausted.
I love that you went to London to see Hamilton. There is just like some beautiful
drama.
It was
hilarious.
There.
I was laughing the entire time because
I was going to say, how was there? Yeah, I'm sure they loved the King George character. hey, wait a minute here.
That sounds familiar.
How was the look that you saw on your bride's face when you got home? You put down the bags, and did it say on her face, okay, that's all done, and now it's just you for the rest of my life? Did she look despondent at all, or... Was it just me?
I don't know if you're just oversharing a little bit, Pat, but maybe. I'm a little concerned for you.
Like, I'm going to wake up with this guy every morning till I die.
Let's be clear, though. Pat's wife puts old fashions in his desk drawers so he can get through the morning show.
I'm looking. Is that the scavenger hunt? That's the location of little old Wisconsin old fashion?
That was his birthday present.
Yeah.
There was glitter involved. Oh,
wow. Did you not see the surprise party that got put on for me on air?
I heard about it. I did not see it, but I was told that it was marvelous.
Oh, we wore plaid shirts.
Yeah. Yes,
everybody dressed up like Pat.
Mm-hmm. I have not been so self-conscious about what I wear. Now every Thursday, it's like, oh, God, she's going to say something. Okay, so.
Listeners actually started like sending wardrobe suggestions that he has taken, and he has since purchased some Chelsea boots and some skinny jeans.
Yes, and some untucked shirts, and damn, they would, you know.
Ka-chow.
Yeah. Ka-chow.
There you go, Pat. Oh, you're the wardrobe champion.
I did. I outsourced the wardrobe, and in our last half hour, I outsourced hobbies. I'm looking for a hobby.
Okay.
How about you? Are you looking for hobbies around the civic media empire here? You normally share with us news of, you know, what's happening at the world headquarters. You're still getting caught up, but is there any breaking news to share with folks today?
We're going to have some pretty excited changes coming in the coming weeks here. We're going to be making some lineup changes. Town Call's final edition is going to be tomorrow. So there's going to be... Okay. Yeah, Will Walter and I, you'll still find us across various civic media platforms, but Town Call going to be coming to an end. I'm excited because it's going to at least free me up to be able to go to all of the excellent stations that we have and that we're building across the state of Wisconsin. So it frees me up a little bit to help improve all of the products that we're doing. So you're going to see me. I was in Waukesha yesterday. I'm going to be around the state more frequently, and they're very excited about those opportunities.
Would that availability start happening at like 6:06 weekday mornings? Because there's always room for company over here.
On a day that I'm up in Chippewa Falls, sure.
On a day that you're up in Chippewa Falls.
I'll go find an old-fashioned in your desk drawer with you. That works for me.
I'd like to revive the idea of a bus and a traveling show.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah, let's.
Sam is in. Sam raised his hand. I saw that.
Yeah. I like that idea.
Yeah, let's get you in on that. We, you know, see what Aaron's been up to since he moved to a later part of the day here. I'm going to ask one inside question, and because it leads to a story. But I understand that we are going to be getting what's called in the radio business a new clock, which just means the time when the commercial breaks are going to move. And I was looking at that yesterday for the first time, and then I'll get to the story. But does that start next week, or is that just still somewhere on the horizon?
We're doing some tests soon, so we're going to see. It's great. We're going to test it out before it actually goes everywhere, which is just, you know, one of those very, very smart things to do.
That is.
It's going to consolidate some of our news and weather at the top of the hour as well, so we're excited about that and be able to bring all of the information that listeners are looking for in one consolidated.
So the reason I ask is that we do have the current clock here is pretty hard because it's a network. So you got to get out at a certain point. Well, every Thursday morning at about 8:15, I appear with Chad Holmes on Bull Falls Radio, as I will again in a few minutes here. But because Chad is not on the network, it's just a standalone local show. For him, the clock isn't as rigid. And so we'd go on, and instead of getting out at 8:29, we'd go till 8:30, 31, 32, whatever the case may be. And I was getting used to that. Last week, I'm prattling on and on and on. And right at 8:29, he says, Pat, I got to go to break. See you later. Bye. And that's when he said to me, with the move to the new studio in Wausau, they're now on the hard clock. But he kind of forgot to tell me that before I sounded like drunk uncle, just going on and on with some story.
We've all been there.
Are we talking about me?
Yeah, no, or we've talked, you know, over the number.
Yeah, it tends to happen, but that's okay. But we'll have more, it's going to be more flexibility as well. So maybe eventually we're going to have those.
Okay, I got to cut you off, Luke, because the show's about to end here. So
hey, wait, I need to pitch a public service announcement at 11 today.
Okay, 11 o'clock.
Yeah, we're going to talk about whatever Jane wants to talk about. Also, probably vitamin D deficiency and iron deficiency anemia. That's been in the news lately.
Okay, now I'm cutting her off to tell everybody thanks for tuning in today. Have a great Thursday. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks, Ben.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars, workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight.
The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.